Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined today by my brother and yours, Anthony Buongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm great, and I'm so excited to talk about this movie.
Are those new frames?
No.
Okay.
These are the only glasses I've ever owned.
Anyway, I think I've only now just looked at you. So today's episode I am hyped about, and it's something I newly love.
I wanted to ask you what made you so excited to talk about this, because this is your idea.
We're talking about Ghost from 1990.
Ghost.
So Alamo has been doing this thing called like Queer 101, where they show a movie, I think usually on a Monday, like a slow night, like a Monday or Tuesday, and it opens up with like... It starts with like an introduction from some like critic or somebody who's like talking about it. So we went to see this because, you know, it was like, oh, I know it's a good movie. I haven't seen it. I hadn't seen it in full since I was like eight, like on VHS. And I don't even know why I watched it then, because I didn't understand
what's
about
it called?
Embezzlement.
What 101?
Queer.
Oh, see. Okay. Interesting. I watched this movie and I was like, I think this movie's kind of gay.
So I don't remember the critic, which sucks, but let me tell you what the person said. He said, all three of the main stars are androgynous.
Yes.
You get a vibe that they're a throuple in some way.
Yes.
Especially in the beginning.
Oh boy. A lot of what I thought was going to be a hot take on my end, you're taking me out at the knees. Yeah. Cause this is the first time I think I've watched this movie as an adult, if ever. And it slapped me in the face. I was like, wow, this is queer as hell.
I know, and the joke when they're in the, when the two guys are in the elevator, I don't know if they meant it to be, or it just, you can't help but read it that way, but it feels like a very crass, like, AIDS joke.
Well, also, like, that they have intimate knowledge of each other's bodies.
Yes.
Like, that they're a couple.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, everybody in this movie is fucking gorgeous.
And also, that you can't forget, like, it ends basically with the... Whoopi's body and her getting together.
Oh boy, we have a lot to... we launched right into this, and I thought we were going to work up to this, but yeah, I have a lot to say.
Well okay, let's work back
let's
so we saw it. Me and Jen went to see it on a Monday night, whatever, and it was one of those things where it was like, yeah, I'll see an old movie, and then like halfway through I was like, this movie's fucking incredible. And afterwards, like, I showed affection to her. I hugged and kissed Jen. And I was like, I realized, like, that's what romantic movies used to do for you. Like, when they used to make actual
They make you feel amore.
Yeah, like, when's the last time you saw a romantic movie? Not a rom-com, not some dark thing about how love sucks.
Like a romance.
A romance, and then afterwards you feel good and you hug each other and you're like, oh, I love you. Yeah. Like, it makes you feel that, too.
Yeah, yeah. What's your memory of watching this as a kid? Because I have a formative memory.
I remember I was at a sleepover at a cousin's house.
Oh, that's not mine, but go ahead.
And their parents were watching it. And it was like a grown-up movie. So they were in offices, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. And then we had it on VHS. Mm-hmm. As we've talked about before, our parents were huge...
Pirates,
and would rent VHSs and then copy them onto blank VHS tapes. All you had to do was...
And kept a cataloged system. We thought this was normal until we grew up and realized...
Yeah, we were just at a party recently explaining this to people. And
they were like, what?
Yeah. you're like, that's everyone, right? No? Yeah, all you had to do is connect two VCRs to one TV, and then you could just dub a tape from it. So I remember having it, and I do think it was one of those... So they also used to do this thing where they would... make it so you couldn't dub it, so it would like get really like basically the image would be bad. The image would like
it would go in and out.
Go in and out. And I think Ghost was one of them.
Oh.
But we still copied it. So I think the first time, or maybe the only time, I saw it the whole way through, I was a kid in our apartment when we were kids, and it was like the middle of the day. I remember Mom vacuuming at some point during it. And, you know, I was like, okay, there's ghosts in it. I didn't get all the embezzlement shit. So it was one of those things we were saying before we went on the air. Like, it's one of those movies where you're like, oh, I've seen that. And then when you watch it, you're like, oh, I actually haven't seen it. Like, now I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
I thought I had seen it, but I didn't.
Same. The reason I ask is because I'm always curious, since we are brothers.
Yeah.
Only by blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not by choice, by any means. Some of our formative memories are the same.
Yes.
Memory. But I have a... I have my memory of it is watch it being on in the TV in the living room in our apartment.
Yeah.
And this is like a little bit, what I'm about to say is a little bit out of pocket. I remember watching the clay scene.
Mm-hmm.
And as a very young child, being like, this is something is going on with me.
Something's happening.
Something's happening down under. And I cannot help but feel that now as an adult and I'm rewatching it, I'm like, the way that she is so masculine.
She's boyish.
Presenting. She's boyish.
Very boyish.
And I remember like being very fascinated by like his arms yeah. and his hands around her, and what they're playing with is very phallic.
Sure, yeah.
I'm like, did this movie make me gay?
yeah, I believe
because I remember like it's one of the first things I remember watching where I'm like, oh, this is turning me on. I think
this and the poster to Gremlins made you gay.
Yes, the poster to Gremlins and that little scene in Ghostbuster where Dan Aykroyd's pants get unzipped.
That's what made you gay.
Yes,
and that's why you do think Dan Aykroyd's still the biggest hunk in Hollywood.
I do. But yeah, it's crazy because it is so. Like, they made so many choices in her styling and her hair and everything. Like, she is so boyish.
She wears a lot of his clothes. After he dies, she wears a lot of his clothing.
But even before, like, when they're walking down the street, yeah. she's wearing pants in every scene.
Yeah.
She's very, like, she's almost, like, butch presenting in some parts. Right. Like old yeah. school lesbian dressing in that way. Yeah. That's what I mean by butch.
I see it more as, like, boyish.
Yeah.
And supposedly the director didn't like that she cut her hair like that, but it ended up being such a big thing for her.
Yeah.
Cause she had been like in like St. Elmo's Fire and stuff and on, I think General Hospital or whatever. Mm. But then this was like some huge breakout for her.
Yeah.
And also she's in The Substance. So she's sort of come back
that
again.
Demi Moore is fucking incredible. She's always been incredible.
Yeah.
She's incredible in this movie. Where she has relatively little to do. I still think she's very good.
Okay, yeah.
And it's crazy to me that The Substance is the first time she's ever been nominated for anything as an actress or won anything as an actress.
Right, she wasn't nominated for Ghost. Whoopi Goldberg was nominated yeah. and won.
Yes, and I think she's also incredible. She's also incredible. Yeah. Patrick Swayze, I've never been more attracted to him. Young yeah. Tony Goldwyn is so fucking hot.
Yes.
Old Tony Goldwyn is hot.
Yeah.
But he, first of all, I didn't know he was of the Goldwyn dynasty.
Yes, he is.
Like Samuel Goldwyn.
Yeah.
But like everyone in this movie is arguably androgynous and beautiful.
And shirts are off
and
all
shirts
the time.
Are all Kimbo. Just, everyone's always touching.
But even like.
There's a lot of heavy petting.
Even like Swayze, like. He's got a muscular build, but it's tight and lean.
Yes, but and
he's
also,
not like big man. I it's like very like yeah.
His character is feminized, I think. Right?
In some ways, yeah.
In some ways, like even in the like he's the one who wants to get married and she's the one who's like he's
no,
like
he's not.
Yeah, he said she says I want to marry you, right?
And he's sort of putting her off.
No, now. He says you used to he's like you're the one who shuts down every time I talk about it.
Oh, okay. Oh, I forgot. Oh, okay.
And also just the fact that, like, if you really want to read into it, like, the fact that he is killed in front of her, you could read as emasculating.
He's killed
by another man in front of her. I think the fact
And in
that,
a way, he's cucked.
Yes, that's what I mean. He's cucked
by Tony Goldwyn.
By Tony Goldwyn, yeah. And then he's forced to, like, as a ghost, sit there and watch Tony Goldwyn
kiss
almost
her.
Fuck his wife.
Right.
I think it's brilliant that they're on their way home from seeing Macbeth.
Yeah, they it's very Batman's parents.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, God, New York is the most dangerous place in the world.
I love the way New York looks in this, though. It's always wet and dark. And this movie does a very interesting visual thing where it's got very subdued, pale colors. There's not a lot of bright, poppy colors. But the light, the actual lights, like whether it be the sun or like a street lamp, are very, very bright. So the... It's got a lot of luminescence in it.
Yeah.
Like even like in that scene where he dies and they're talking before he dies, they're talking about the relationship. They're walking in the street and the street lamps above them are so bright.
Yes.
It's got such a great visual style. Yeah, yes.
I guess we don't need to summarize the movie. If you're listening, you've seen Ghost.
Yeah.
Do
you know who directed it?
The director of Airplane.
The director, the co-director of Airplane, Jerry Zucker, one half of the Zucker brothers.
Yeah.
And it's funny, the next year or 2 years later, in Naked Gun 3, they parodied the Clay scene. Let me give you credits. Jerry Zucker also co-created Police Squad, Airplane,
the Naked created, Gun. Co-created Police Squad.
Yeah. It's written by Bruce Joel Rudin, who also wrote Jacob's Ladder, Deep Impact, and Deadly Friend. Yeah.
Ooh.
Wes Craven's Deadly Friend.
Is he queer?
Yes. And
somebody was queer. I knew it. Somebody was queer.
He was queer, and he actually, the Ditto thing comes from his life, because in high school he had a girlfriend that he didn't like her really. Well, he liked her, but like he was gay. So he had a girlfriend just to kind of like have a girlfriend. And she would say, I love you. And he'd say ditto because he couldn't say it back. But
that's
so
interesting because that's in the movie.
In the movie, so it means I love you.
Right. But it comes from a place of hiding your sexuality.
Well, I don't think hiding your sexuality. Well, right. Well, you could read it that way. Yeah.
I think in the movie they're genuinely in love. But I'm saying it's interesting that even that comes with that wrinkle of like it comes from a queer story.
Right. Yeah, he was the queer creator behind it. The cinematographer was Adam Greenberg, who did Terminator, Sister Act, Three Men and a Baby. The production designer was Jane Muskie, When Harry Met Sally, Raising Arizona. The composer, I usually go do all the credits, but I think the music in this is very good. The composer is Maurice Jarre, who did Lawrence of Arabia, Dr. Zhivago, and Dead Poets Society. I love the score in this movie. The score
is so good. Why don't movies have scores anymore?
Well, why don't movies have themes anymore and melodies? Yeah. Like, this movie has the repeated theme that's like that sort of like sweet. But I mean the score.
The Unchained Melody score?
No, not that. Like it begins in the beginning, and then like when they're talking, it's usually like a sweet moment. You hear it.
But I feel like that's got pieces of Unchained Melody worked
into
it.
And that made that song a hit again.
What caught my eye is the cinematographer, I want to say, was nominated for an Oscar. It's Walter Murch.
The editor was Walter
Murch, who directed Return to Oz.
Yeah. The cinematographer is Adam Greenberg. I just said it.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking pay attention.
Sorry.
This won an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay and Best Supporting Actress for Whoopi. It was nominated.
She's good. She's great in it.
It was nominated for Best Picture and Best Editing, but it lost to Dances with Wolves.
So what's funny is
it was the most rented video of 1991.
Yeah, that was our parents mostly.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that contemporary reviews were mixed.
Yeah.
What's funny is I always like to see what Ebert said about things. Did you see his?
No.
So Ebert gave a 2.5 out of 4 stars. He was critical of the obligatory action climax, the ridiculous visitation of the demons from hell, which I actually love, the slow study of the Molly character, and he said the single best scene was the one where Sam overtakes Otome's body, but he was critical of it, saying we should have seen Goldberg kissing more.
I agree.
But of course, the movie compromises and shows us Swayze holding her. Too bad, because the logical version of this would actually have been more spiritual and moving. I think he wanted to see two women.
I don't know if it would be more spiritual and moving, but I find myself going, come on, you fucking cowards.
Yeah, do it.
Do it.
And I think, and there's something queer about the fact that Whoopi Goldberg seems like into it. She's like, use my body.
Yeah.
And it's so, like, essentially what we're watching is two women, but it's not.
And it's also two women of different races in 1991. Yes,
it's so
or 1990,
fascinating.
Yeah. It's also, like, you've listened to Gorley and Rust, right?
Yeah.
You know, they started off with doing, like, Friday the 13th, and then they just went off. Yeah. They just keep doing different themes, and one of them was Yuppie Nightmares. And this movie falls a little bit into that because, like, they're like perfect, like yuppie characters.
Yes, he works on Wall Street.
But he's not defined by that, because when he's at home, he's wearing Hawaiian shirts and jeans and is a cool dude.
And his wife's an artist,
but also they have a ton of money.
Mm-hmm. It pissed me off when they were like, oh, there's a whole nother floor to this huge apartment.
Yeah,
in the beginning. I was like, you motherfuckers.
I read some trivia that was like, that apartment's still around and it. Of course, like millions of billions.
Course. Yeah. Imagine getting a huge loft apartment in New York City and being like, oh, there's a whole other floor up here.
Yeah, how we didn't know. And even like the fact, like, they're businessmen and have good business sense, I guess, but like also know how to like take a wall down. But all three of them can do it.
Yeah.
So and they're physical too.
So you were saying before, they're thruppily.
Yes, they are.
But thruppily. I also think that like Demi, Swayze, and Whoopi are kind of thruppily.
Yes, too. I think so.
Yeah. But yeah. They are. They're very much like she is kind of with both of them in a way.
Yes, yes, yes. It's the critic who presented it through at Alamo said something like, even in the like not subtext, like even in the story, you get the vibe that at least at one point they hooked up. Like,
yes,
she hooked up with,
because when he is like comforting her and goes to kiss her, I couldn't help but feel like it wasn't the first time that they've done that.
But there's a very weird loaded, like when they're like, she's taking the statue of the angel. He shows up and she's kind of like, why is he here? There's a weird moment like that.
Maybe. Yeah. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. But the, yeah. Yeah. But so it's like, it's the yuppie thing, but it's also like a weird, cause it's the early, it's 1990. So it's like, it's almost the '80s. So, but it also feels a little seven. Like you look at their office, there's like, they don't even have like computers. They have like DOS computers.
Like, yeah.
Word and processors. Like carpet in the yeah. office. You know, and they're making jokes about like learning Japanese. Like, yeah. So like it feels, I don't know. It feels like in between two eras in a way.
Yeah, it does. Tony Goldwyn, I know I've said this, but he was so fine. But he's a great villain, and I thought that scene in the office with the when he starts typing on the computer, murderer,
yeah, yeah,
and then
yeah.
he says, "Who are you?" and then it says, "Sam." Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, "Oh, this is good." There, it's kind of genre bending. Because in the beginning, when it was starting, I was like, oh, is this like more of a thriller than I remember it being? But then it's got moments of great comedy, and then it's got other moments of great romance.
Yeah, it is amazing in
so
that
it's
way.
Kind of all three of those genres.
Yeah.
And I got to, not to jump to the end, but I was blubbering like a baby at the end.
Really?
I started crying like despite myself. Because I don't always cry like that.
Yeah.
But something about the way the last line of like all the love, you get to take it with you.
Yeah.
Hit me so hard that I started crying.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
And it's right before the credits are rolling. And I was like wiping my eyes, like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm crying so hard.
Yeah.
It's good. Such a great last line of a movie.
It's fucking great. Yeah.
All this love, you get to take it with you.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's fucking good, man.
He was so good.
By the way, there's an amazing shot in the beginning where the same scene where they've got the angel statue that they're bringing in through the window. You see them working, like trying to setting it down. And then you see it looks like the camera's pulling away from them. But then you realize someone's holding a mirror and that person is moving with the mirror.
Yeah.
It's such a weird mindfuck shot.
Yeah.
That I was like, I watched it twice. I was like, why? I was like, why that? Like, obviously it's very cool, but like, why that shot? Because it's one of those shots that makes you go, what you were watching wasn't what you thought you were watching.
Right, right. What did you make of, I watched this twice.
Mm-hmm.
In the moment where he dies.
Yeah.
There's a moment where he wakes up in bed next to the statue of the angel.
Yeah.
And is freaking out. And you get the sense of like, oh, this was a dream, maybe.
Yeah.
Then it cuts to him in the bedroom with her.
Yeah.
And she's reaching out to him, and then heaven is calling him. But and then he goes back to the scene of
and
the murder.
And then he's back on the street.
What is that?
I don't know. It's very weird.
And it
I don't
does
know
seem
how
like when
that.
Every other person dies, there is a little beat before they come out of the body.
Yeah, there is something that happens.
So what, and when we see it through, we only see it through his eyes, but it feels like a weird, like, I was almost like, this is very like, got shades of like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Like weird mix of like, is this memory? Is this a dream?
Maybe
what
it's
is
like
this?
Maybe it's like some sort of representation of like your life flashing before your eyes.
Yeah. But she's there when he's being called to heaven. And so ideally like he was supposed to go cross over then.
Right. And he doesn't. Yeah.
But in his crossing over would have been in like a fictional situation.
I guess.
In their bedroom.
Yeah, yeah. It is weird. It is weird.
It's very weird. And then at the end, they didn't really explore this, but after he touches her.
Yeah.
Then he has one line. It's like a throwaway line where he's like, what's happening to me? And you see that he's getting weaker. Where it's like, is that supposed to imply that like he fulfilled his unfinished business?
No, it's something that's set up earlier on when the one guy... when he goes to see Oda Mae and it's filled with ghosts.
Yeah.
There's a guy got ghosts coming from Jersey. Some guy jumps into her body and then afterwards he's like weak.
Oh, right.
And he's like, it takes a lot of energy.
Oh,
yeah, and it's kind of like very exposition-y.
Oh, I didn't think of that. But what I was reading it as was like he's touched her, so now the heaven is calling him even more strongly because it's like he got what he wanted.
Okay.
Is to touch her one last time.
Yeah.
Do
you...
That sex scene is hot as hell, by the way.
Which one?
The first sex scene. The clay and...
The clay
going
and then
it into the sex scene.
Yeah.
It's a lot of just touching, and a lot of it, I have to... Again...
It's not super... Yeah.
It's not... There's a lot more of his body than her body.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, touching his chest and his stomach and stuff.
She's wearing his shirt.
Yeah.
Which is androgynous. But then... That one moment you see him like lift it up and you see her side and you realize she's not wearing panties.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that.
Yeah. But there's something for
so
everyone.
There was something sexy about it. Yeah. So something that I completely forgot and I was like, whoa, I did not remember anything about this in this movie was his like learning to be a poltergeist.
From the guy in the subway.
Yeah.
What was that about too? Where he was like, what do you think I'm lying? They pushed me. I had trouble with that.
I think, well, like if like poltergeists in general, they say are ghosts that are, they're so overly emotional that they affect reality.
Okay.
And I think the reason the character turns at that point is because he's sort of triggered. And I think it's just like he's stuck in his feeling. Like ghosts like that are stuck in the feeling they felt when they die, I think. That's how I read it.
But so I'm... Are we meant to believe that he did jump or that he was pushed?
Oh, I don't know.
Because he's like, what do you think? I jumped? I was pushed. You don't believe me?
Yeah, I don't know.
So I was like, oh, is this supposed to be like he's super sensitive because he actually did kill himself? And that's why
he's a very interesting character because even like the first thing he says, like he's like trains? Like what does that mean? Yeah. Like it's so weird. Like it comes out of nowhere and... he's such a weird looking guy.
Yeah,
and the fact that he haunts trains, like he stays on subway trains.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit like...
It's
like
he's stuck there because that's where he died. Ghostbusters?
No.
I kept thinking of the Ghostbusters scene.
The Wim Wenders movie. Whatever. Angels. I forget what it's movie. The fucking movie where like they're angels in the real world.
Angels in America?
No. I'll find it.
I was thinking of remember in Answer the Call. I guess he's going to Queens.
Yeah,
the ghost that gets stuck on the subway car.
So how did you feel about that? Because part of me is like, this is cool. It's
the jumping onto the train. I thought it was great.
No, the learning to be a poltergeist.
It was fun.
It's fun, but then when we get to the finale, it feels like the movie just really wants to break its own rules and have him be able to like fight the villain. Because he's, at the end, he's touching and moving lots of shit.
Yeah.
He's basically there.
Yes. And it's redemption for him because he gets to essentially kill his murderer.
Right. Although when he sees that it's going to, like, the glass is going to fall, he, like, tries to stop. Like, he doesn't want it to happen.
I was talking about Willy.
Oh, Willy. Oh, okay. Wings of Desire. That's what I was thinking of. Wings of Desire.
I've never seen that.
Willie Lopez, he's Puerto Rican.
She's so good.
Let me say two things about her. I can't think of any other movie where a character comes in at the exact moment that the movie needs them. Like, right when the movie's been sad and weird and scary, all of a sudden she comes in and it's like, gives the movie this whole new breath. Yeah. And it's like, she's so funny. She's so perfect at it. And her and Sweezy have incredible chemistry.
Yeah, they do.
Even better than him and Demi Moore.
I thought the same thing.
Patrick Sweezy and her have incredible... And supposedly he fought for her to be in it. He really wanted her to be in it. Because he had seen her in like a play and he was like, oh, she'd be perfect for it. And they
Jumpin' Jack Flash was her first movie.
Yeah.
They but I guess she was still not very big.
Yeah. Well, he saw her in a play, though.
Yeah.
They have incredible chemistry.
Yeah.
It's and she's so perfect. She's so funny. She brings this whole nother flavor to the movie.
I know now it's so iconic, but like the delivery of the, I'll tell her, Molly, you in danger, girl.
It's yeah, so he goes, good. Tell her she's in danger. I'll tell her.
Molly, you in danger, girl.
The way she adds things.
Yeah.
Willie Lopez, he's Puerto Rican. She's great. She's so good in it. Everything with her going to the bank with the pillbox so hat. Good.
Well, that's the thing. She looks so funny. It's such a funny, like, that whole sequence is so funny.
Yeah.
And then there are other sequences that are like so action-y. It's so many
crazy things going on.
Yeah, it's the way it's, I found myself feeling like the way it was acted was brilliant in that like they were so good at like acting like they couldn't see him.
Yes. Yeah.
Even though he was clearly there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene is so great.
Despite all the different genres that it seems to be like putting together, the movie works and it has such a specific vibe.
Oh yeah.
Like there's a lot of tans and like I mean, maybe that's,
it's got a very specific, very very unique aesthetic,
yeah,
vibe. It all kind of works together to create something that feels really different than anything certainly that's come out recently.
Yeah, I can't think of other films like this.
No.
That wouldn't, like, I feel like if you made it now, it would lean into more comedy, it would lean into more horror, it would lean into some direction more.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't just have different genres, like, it just, there are comedy scenes, but then, like, there's scene, like, when he's in the hospital with the old man ghost, like, that's such an interesting, like, sci-fi kind of scene.
Yeah.
It's scary. Do you know how they did the sound of the demons that come up from hell?
No.
It's the sound, it's slowed down babies crying.
Oh.
And reversed. So you recognize it as something.
That's interesting.
And it's also pained.
Yeah.
It's so spooky. It's so scary.
So I read that as, first of all, I think it's cool the way that it's like shadows, the shadow
beings.
Yeah. They're taking those souls to hell.
Yeah. I like that it's heaven and hell without being too like,
it's not overtly religious.
I mean, there is like religious iconography, like the angel and stuff, but like it's sort of following its own almost like sci-fi kind of rules. By the way, his death, I think, is such a smart trick because he's struggling with Willie Lopez and you hear a gunshot and then Willie runs away and then Sam running runs after him and you're like, oh, he's running after him. And you're like, oh, did Demi Moore get shot? Like, but then he walks back and he sees her with his body he didn't realize that he died, but he kept moving.
Right.
It's such a good trick.
They do that later too with Willie. He, like, his ghost, like, lands on the other side of where the cars actually got him.
Yeah.
It's like it's almost like an inertia thing of, like, the soul keeps going even though the body stops.
Yeah, and you don't know.
And you don't realize, and then they realize, oh, I'm not in my body, actually.
And same thing happens with Carl. Like, he doesn't realize he died. Like, he stands back up after he's dead, and he looks at Patrick Swayze like, how can I see you now?
Well,
and he's like, oh, Carl.
Maybe it's just the way he acted it. I read in that moment, it seemed like Carl was like, oh, my friend.
Yeah. Here.
And then like the realization of like almost like waking up from a sleep, like, oh, this is actually the situation that I'm in.
Yeah.
I didn't I'm remembering everything all at once.
Yeah.
And then he's dragged to hell. But there is a moment of him being like, hey, like, I do think that he genuinely did love him.
Yes. Yes. He did love him. And I think he just, the money and everything drove him mad.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he was trying to frame him.
So he has him killed to get the, I was a little fuzzy on the details, to get the passwords.
Yeah, because remember he sees him working on it, and he's like, do you want my help? I think he would rather
Rita Miller is not real. It's a way of laundering that money.
Yeah, and it's for the mafia.
Right.
And, I think he feels like, oh, he can't, only Sam can get in. He can't get in.
So he's essentially he's the mafia's connection to legitimize the money. And he gets a cut of it.
Yeah.
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 My question, I guess, is why couldn't he have stolen that thing without killing him? You see him being like, oh, the whole point is to get his wallet. Like, we need his wallet.
Right. I think that's what it was. I think he didn't want him to die. I think Willie killed him, but...
Oh, right, right, right.
He hired him to mug him.
To just get his wallet. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and I also like Carl, like, kind of devolving through the whole movie, like, just becoming a sweaty,
yeah,
crazy mess.
Yeah.
From, like, poised and attractive in the beginning, and clearly being friends, mm-hmm. And then by the end, he's, like, threatening Molly's life.
Yeah.
The scene where he comes in and he like pours the coffee on himself to take his shirt off is so, supposedly the director didn't like it, but it's so.
He sounds like a pill.
It's so crazy. it's because you see it coming and you're like, oh no. And like Patrick Swayze has to watch it.
And he's sitting there. I was like the stillness of this performance. Like he's sitting there watching.
Yeah.
Interestingly, like he's not like getting like irrationally angry.
Yeah.
He's not like trying to stop it.
Right.
He's just watching it stewing.
Right. Right. And, like, but then he jumps.
And maybe a little into it.
Yeah. Maybe a little into it. But then, but then he jumps. And that's when he pushes something for the first time. Yeah.
because his emotions were so strong.
He knocks over the pitcher that fucking Carl turns away.
Yeah.
Which is so sleazy.
I love the.
Such sleazy 80s bad guy.
Yeah. 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 I love the like built-in lore in the movie. Like in the movie, they make it very clear that like animals can see ghosts.
Cats can.
Is it just cats?
I mean, it's just cats.
I assumed it was all animals.
Well, I think about the movie Constantine with Keanu Reeves, where he talks about like cats are. He says like cats are half in and half out of death. Okay. Like there's something mystical about cats because. I don't think doesn't he interact with a dog that doesn't see him at some point?
I don't remember there being a dog.
I don't remember.
Maybe.
I thought I saw something like that. The cat can see him. Yeah. Or at least he can affect the cat can sense him. Well, that's a crazy scene too when Willie's inside and like Willie likes looking at her taking her clothes off and you're like, oh, is he gonna rape her?
Yes. That I thought was gonna go there.
Yeah. Even that's such good drama, like you're there to witness, but you can't. And this is what reminds me of Wings of Desire. Like, you're there to witness, but you can't actually interact. So, like, if she got raped, he couldn't do anything. I do like his, like, little quips that he makes basically just for himself.
Yeah. He's, like, he's got, like, this running monologue.
Yeah.
Especially, like, when he's around
Carl.
Carl, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun. It's fun.
He does. Swayze, like, Sam Wheat. He's good at playing. I mean, he's just a good actor. Like, the range of emotions he taps into throughout this movie.
So, thinking about the special effects, I think they hold up because they're abstract enough.
Yeah. Everything's kind of shadowy.
And everything's kind of an abstraction. Like,
like
not a literal... Like, when he goes through a door, it's not, like, really trying to show you the molecules of the door. It's, like, more of an abstract idea of what it would be like to go through a door.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I like the old guys like, doors aren't as bad as you think.
It was interesting that ghosts innately recognize each other as ghosts.
Yes, yeah. That is interesting. Like, and that they're kind of just everywhere. Like, he was, the old man's in the hospital because he died and his wife is there.
Yeah.
Kind of dying. Or like, he says like she's still hanging on.
Yeah, he says she's fighting it. And then you see the guy like coding.
Yeah.
He's not going to make it.
And then like the heavens open up and stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like, I'm looking at my notes. There's a lot of like, blue is a color that repeats a lot. Mm. But it's not like a bright blue. It's like a very sort of like subdued blue. I want to talk more about the yuppie thing because money is itself a big part of this movie. In the beginning, he finds a old penny from like 18, whatever, and she keeps it in a jar. And then they work as bankers. And then money is what makes his death happened and it's what's going after. And then at the end, he moves another penny to like prove that he's there. It's just, it's that 80s thing of like money is everything. Like greed is good. Money is everything. Yeah. Money is it's everywhere. So Reagan. Yes. Yeah.
Or
I mean, resisting it a little bit too.
Yeah. At this point we were in the Bush era, but like still very much from of that period. And the you know, I don't know. Do yuppies? I don't think yuppies exist the way we
no, they don't.
Think of them or thought of them back then.
No, no, they don't.
They've kind of been replaced by like hipsters and gentrifiers.
Yeah, which is yeah, because the economy has changed, and yeah. even those people who have money, what they're aiming for. What they're aiming for is more like what Patrick Swayze's doing, which is like, I'm not really defined by my job. I'm a cool guy outside.
Right.
Whereas yuppies, I think, are more like the Carl character of like, I wear a suit everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm defined by my... Like in the beginning, like when they see like the really nice car, he's like, oh, I gotta get that car. Like it's a lot of that shit.
Yeah.
By the way, I love Patrick Swayze like sees a woman in the office, he's like, looking good. And it's like, can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
It's not a thing we can do anymore, sir.
Yeah. I was thinking that. I was getting, I don't know why, I was having connections of to Rosemary's Baby when I was watching it. Maybe it's just the short haircut, but also like this, like the young childless couple in this new apartment in New York City.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
There's something to
to
that. I don't know what that is.
Do you think this movie? I think
this movie could go along with those other, like those Polanski films of like the horrors of urbanity.
Yes, I agree. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that there's racism in this movie.
Tell me more about that. Like,
I think, and you know, I'm just reading this as someone reading it from now, looking at the film. I'm not mad at the film, but I think the depiction of Willie is pretty racist. And I do think,
he's like, Reeds is like a savage.
Yeah, he's like, he lives
he's like not fully human.
He lives in a hovel and he's like eating like...
He like doesn't even really like talk much.
Right, and he just has no problem murdering.
Yeah, yeah.
And like when Carl goes to confront him, like there is like this sort of like juxtaposition of Carl like being like upper class and Willie being lower.
Yeah.
But it's, like you said, Willie is depicted as like so... inhumane to the point of like it's not great,
but I guess my counter to that would be I do think that Oda May's character like has, while she's not the most flattering portrayal, at least like the film treats her and her family like as characters that have interiority and
but they're kind of silly.
Yeah,
they're con artists.
I agree.
They've got a connection to the mystic, which is like uncivilized.
Yeah,
true. You know, true. He's a, you know, banking and money and computers is logic and you know the new world and mysticism and magic is the old world.
The thing about race in these old movies is that it's never explicitly talked about.
No, right.
So I found myself thinking, like, if this movie were remade today or made today, there would be explicit commentary on the fact that she's black and that they're white.
Right. The only – but her desire for money and, like, him making her give the money, which is very funny. She makes her give the money to
the nuns.
The nuns, and she, like, doesn't want to let go of
it. I was watching the scene. I was like, is this where Sister Act was born? Like, the scene and they were like, oh, what if she was wearing that hat?
And that nun is the director's mother, I think.
Oh, is it?
The one who faints.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone wants money, but like her, like, it's funny. I was thinking to myself, like, that money could actually change her life. I mean, obviously he doesn't want her to die. Like, she has to get rid of the money. Right. But the way he's like, no, you've got to give it away.
Yeah.
It's like, just this idea of like, people who have money don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And people who don't have money do need it. It's like, that kind of vibe.
Yeah. That's funny. Which is like $4 million.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, she doesn't know how to dress up. He tells her to dress nice. And she kind of like dresses like kind of, it's kind of odd.
It's like churchy.
Yeah. Although I love when she goes to the police and Stephen Root is the cop and he's showing her all of her mugshots and it's all her in different wigs and shit.
Yeah.
I do think it's a funny idea that she's a con artist, and then he, like, she must really have some.
Well, she does say that, like, her mother and grandmother, like, were actually able to do it.
Yeah.
So she just needed it to be awoken in her, I guess.
Do you think there's some queerness to the weird trick that she pulls where, like, she's not in the closet and then they open the closet and she's there? Like, she enters with that trick?
Yeah. I didn't think of it until you just said it, but yeah.
for sure. It's a weird thing because she's supposed to be a medium, but like they do the thing where they like the assistants or I don't know if they're if they're roommates or
I read them sisters. As her sisters. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
They open the door and no one's in there, and then they close and they open it again, and she's there wearing the whole gold thing.
Me Brown.
No, but she's the movie would just be without her. The movie would suffer greatly.
You know, it's so funny. Not funny, but it's been so long since Whoopi Goldberg has been an actress.
Yeah.
Like, she's now, like, just because she's been on The View for, like, 20 years now. Like, she's just, like, so associated with, like, daytime TV and, like, being a personality.
Yeah.
That I was watching this and I was like, oh, yeah, like, Whoopi Goldberg was a really good actress. It's a shame she doesn't act more.
I know, because she was very good.
She was very good. She was great on 30 Rock, remember?
Yes.
when he, Tracy tries to steal her
EGOT or one of her awards. She's great.
Yeah.
She got into Star Trek and Ninja Turtles the same way of just saying I want to be in these things and they just put her in there.
She's such a divisive figure now. Like so many people hate her
cuz of the fucking View.
Yeah.
Because when you're the liberal on The View, it's not like I don't know. I feel like you're both the villain and not, because the show itself is not that. The show is not necessarily liberal.
So no, I feel also the hatred towards The View is the most misogynistic thing in the world. Like every single person in the world is like, oh, fuck The View.
Right.
It's like it's simply women talking about the same things that they talk about on every other show.
Right.
But I reminded me of, remember we went to dinner recently, we overheard those guys. Like Trumpy guys talking.
Yeah,
They're like, oh, Whoopi Goldberg, what a disgrace. We loved her in Sister Act, and look what she's become, liberal trash.
I know. Can you imagine, like, having to hate everything?
Yeah.
Like, to be like, oh, my favorite celebrity is Kelsey Grammer. You know what I mean? Like, you have nothing. Yeah. Oh, my favorite musician? Oh, Kid Rock, obviously. Yeah. Like, you have nothing. You have nothing. Do they have to live artless lives?
Yeah, I guess. But anyway, she's a good actress. She's a really good actress. And I think she deserved it for... Did she get nominated for Color Purple?
I don't remember.
I know she won for this one.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
She's weird because she was also like in the world of stand-up too.
We think
was that later?
So that the thing is, like, we think of her as a stand-up because she would co-host Comic Relief with Robin Williams and Billy Crystal, who were stand-ups. But she wasn't. She did... funny characters in one woman shows.
Okay.
So she never was a stand up. She never was like a joke teller.
Okay.
But no, you're right. She is. I mean, also she has her stage name is very odd and funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Her real name is like Karen Johnson or
something. It's completely silly.
I always think of, remember the Little Rascals movie in the 90s when like all of their parents
were
celebrities
right.
And she was Buckwheat's mom.
And Trump
was the rich kid's dad.
Remember when Trump was just like a joke?
Remember when Trump would beg people to be in movies because that's how starved he was for attention?
Yeah. And people are like, oh, this guy's a joke.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I always like start taking notes and then I just get engrossed in what I'm watching and I stop.
That's good. I did put
back to what I said earlier, so genius they see Macbeth in which... he talks to ghosts in front of people who can't see him.
Yeah, that is... Yeah.
Like, during that dinner scene when he's talking to Banquo's ghost and everybody else is like, who's he talking to?
Yeah.
And she has...
I've never read Macbeth.
She has blood on her hands.
Oh, okay.
Like, and then Lady... Right after seeing it when he's dead, she has blood all over her hands and that's, like, Lady Macbeth.
Smart.
Has the blood on her hands.
Out damn spot. You're a smart guy.
I mean, whenever... anything is name checked in a movie or alluded to, especially if it's Shakespeare, you're like, what's the thematic?
I have this idea for like, I don't know what you'd put it in. You'd put it in like a Naked Gun style parody movie where like, you know, like you'll see a horror movie and they'll be watching like a scary.
Yeah.
Movie.
Yeah.
Like I have this idea for some movie where like you see something like that and then it cuts to a commercial and they're like, you're watching the subtext channel.
Yeah. That's a good joke.
Yeah. But you know, sadly I don't make movies.
You don't have anywhere to put it.
I have nowhere to put it. Anyone who listens, you can take that. I think it'd be so funny. Like all subtext all day.
Yeah. Or like in any movie where like they're reading a book. Or like,
oh, the worst is any high school movie.
Any high school movie in an English class, the book is directly related to what's going on.
Yeah, like Romeo and Juliet in fucking
Twilight.
Yeah. Or even like, aren't they talking about Shakespeare in Halloween? What book are they talking about in class?
They're talking about Shakespeare. And I forget what, though. That's our lesson on subtext, kids. Yeah. Teacher, this has nothing.
We call that illusion.
Yeah, this had nothing to do with what we were talking about yesterday. No, I just felt like it just felt fitting today because there's a killer.
This is a sidebar. I have maybe because I am a teacher, I have a weird thing of like any scenes in classrooms, I'm always looking at what's written on the board.
Sure, yeah.
And it's always, I'm always like, that's written by somebody who's not actually a teacher. Because it'll always be like, full book report on something due Tuesday. And it's like not even the thing they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, what is this fake assignment?
Yeah, it's such bullshit. Yeah. Or like, I always think about the film class in Scream 2 where they're just talking about movies. Like, that's not, I've taught film classes for a long time. It's never been that. It's never been us talking about what the best sequel is. Yet I know people that are like, I took film in college because of that scene in Scream 2. I like the whole thing of like, Oda May doesn't want to help him, so like he like sings.
Oh, the I am Henry the Eighth, I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he sort of bothers her into it.
So yeah, she never sees him.
Right, she only sees him in the picture at the end. She's like cute, white, but cute.
Yeah. I guess that's the only time they talk about where race is commented on.
Well, she does say like Willie Lopez, he's Puerto Rican. Yeah.
But like just they're different. The fact that they are of different races isn't like now it would be much more of a pointed.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Thing. The movie, if they made this now, it would be different in so many different ways.
I was thinking how it would be different. I think there would be, you'd see Molly and him meeting.
Right.
Or there'd be a flashback to them from an earlier moment. Like, you know, just all the tricks that are so much more common now.
Did you notice that like when he like goes to heaven at the end, like you can kind of make out figures there standing waiting for him?
Yes.
There's something spooky about this movie.
Something about his change and like the way he says like you all this love you get to take it with you, like he is bathed in light and becomes enlightened,
and she can see him.
Yeah,
for some reason Molly can see him in that moment.
Yeah, I didn't want to pull at the strings at the threads. But he's all of a sudden like has gained all this knowledge of the afterlife while he's like half there, half not.
Yeah.
It's an interesting way of like portraying it.
Yeah.
And I think it's highlighted by the fact that he is so bathed in light that it's like almost like he's like sort of translucent and the light is coming from him too.
Yes. Yeah.
At the end. And then it's great when you see her.
It's very like enlightenment when you see her idea face, of like knowledge of this, and light.
Of the self. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fully realized self. And like you see her, like the light from him is like shining on her face.
Yeah.
It's visually really
I think
cool.
That's why I thought she could see him. Like somehow like she's now been touched.
No, but like she kisses him.
Right. Well, you need that because that's the tearjerker moment. Like that moment, that's the moment you like. You gain like them kissing and stuff,
and then it just ends in a way that movies don't end anymore.
Like it's just over.
It's just over. Like something that's something else. I feel like contemporary movies they would do something else. There would be another few beats or something.
The studio
they would show her in a year from now.
Yeah,
like it just movies used to be better at like just ending when it was over.
Yeah, the studio begged everyone involved for a sequel. Begged. God,
what would that look like?
Something terrible, but they were like, no. But I think nowadays they would just go, okay, we'll make it without you. We'll make it with other people.
Yeah.
But no, the director, everyone involved were like, no, you can't. Like, what could that possibly be? He comes back for some stupid reason. Like, it would be terrible.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you're
can
right.
Can you think of any other, like, romantic, like, contemporary like romantic movies that like
no it's almost like
because it doesn't even put it on too thick like The Notebook does, you know what I mean, like
in itself The Notebook I guess was the other one I was gonna say, but like in itself is kind of a throwback. It's almost like a throwback to like a Douglas Sirk or something.
Okay. Yeah,
like it's just like you said, it's a romance,
like a melodrama,
like romance, like a without being a romantic comedy.
Yeah that's interesting. Yeah, it's fucking
in moments, not through the whole thing.
And this was a big movie for him because he had been like in tough guy roles and stuff. And then he did Dirty Dancing where he was a romantic lead. And then this, where he is sort of like not too tough a guy. I mean, he does like try to fight, I guess.
Yeah.
But there is something feminized about him.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And maybe it's just the fact that he like shows a full range of emotions too. Like he cries.
He cares about his relationship a lot. There was that weird scene where he, like, before he dies, he was like, I just feel like the other foot's going to drop.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know how I feel about that scene. Because it feels a little, like, on the nose. I don't know. You know, when this movie was first released, the VHS was gray instead of black. Ghostly gray.
Whoa. The opening is interesting because it's very, like, ominous.
It's like a horror movie. You see ghosts and it goes, eh!
Yeah.
Like, it's like a fright beat.
Yeah.
It's got so much different DNA in it.
And it's got, you know, it's them, it's like with this weird imagery of like an abandoned building.
Yeah. And so all this detritus everywhere.
It's all spooky. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where I was like, oh, this is like more, that's when I was like, this is more of a thriller. Like, oh, they're leaning into like it being a ghost story.
Right.
But then and it's interesting that it's cold ghost. That. Yeah. Yeah.
It also, I think, Sixth Sense takes a lot of its ghost rules from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder, that title's interesting. Just Ghost.
Yeah, right. Cause, yeah.
Not a ghost story. Oh, well, that was a shitty movie we saw.
Yeah.
God, what a piece of shit. Comparing this to that.
Then there's that other movie, Ghost Story, or whatever it's called, where it's like, the one with like Fred Astaire, and like, it's based on a book about these guys who like kill this girl, and then later on they're haunted by her. Hmm. Yeah, whatever. All right, I think we've said it all. Go see Ghost, everybody.
Go see Ghost.
And see it on a screen if you can, because it's a nice-looking movie.
I'd like to see it on a screen now that I've enjoyed it.
It's on good. TV. We're crazy for Swayze.
I'm crazy for Swayze.
He's great. Who's hotter, Swayze or Tony Goldwyn?
Tony Goldwyn.
Of course.
But Swayze's got the better body, for sure.
Okay.
But Goldwyn, something about that face.
Mm-hmm.
He was the president on Scandal.
Was he?
Yeah, he's still hot. He's still very hot.
Yeah. This has been PCNC. We end our episode by saying
go bye-bye.